Okay, good morning, and welcome back to Tefillah. And we are looking at, muted by accident, now unmuted. We are looking at the creation of Shmoneh Esrei. So we talked about how they had this revolution of having a fixed text for davening. We talked about the fact that having a fixed text isn't the greatest thing because it forces you to say certain words over and over again by rote. We also noted the problem that it has us asking for things that we're supposed to earn. And what we suggested is that this text was really, number one, only meant to be a minimum. And number two, the goal was to encourage people who otherwise wouldn't be able to say anything to say something. But it was never meant to capture everything. And it was never meant to replace the efforts that you make towards getting the things you're supposed to be working towards. In other words, yes, I'm supposed to try to work to have a parnasa. Yes, I'm supposed to be responsible about my medical situation. All those things I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be doing tshuva myself. But having Shmoneh Esrei helps balance out hishtadlus, helps balance out that feeling of, I need to earn this myself, with an appeal to Hashem. We talked also about the fact that they made it communal, whether that was really the Anshei Knesset HaGdola or not, we discussed a little bit. But I wanted to turn to the actual structure of Shmoneh Esrei and the davening. We're not going to go through it bit by bit, piece by piece. Last time we talked a little bit about sort of just the structure of each bracha, or the order, I should say, of the brachos. But what I want to do is show you for the first bracha in Shmoneh Esrei just how careful they were with language and how each word in that bracha actually carries messages and has meaning to it. Everyone got the sheets, right? Okay. Do you happen to have a Tanakh with you? Because that would also probably help. You know what I did in the end? That's right. I remember now what I did. I put the psukim in English on there, just because I actually gave this shiur in a different form for a group that did not have the Hebrew skills. So I took the English from those sheets and I put them on. I didn't bother to reinsert the Hebrew. I figured you can look it up yourself. And if you have a Tanakh, that will certainly be a possibility. Actually, one step before we get to the attention to language, and that is at the top of the sheet, a last note about the structure of the brachos. I wanted to point out something regarding the way that Chazal were so concerned that we not tamper with the structure of a bracha. And this is something that some people are aware of, some people are not aware of. Dasi, you'll like it because it'll lead to some tangents that I think are interesting. Take a look at source number one on the sheet. Brachos Mem Amud Beis. Amar Rav, kol bracha she'ein ba hazkaras Hashem, eina bracha. He says, a bracha that doesn't mention Hashem's name at the beginning of the bracha is not a bracha. Hashem's name has to be there. Obviously, the usual way we do it, Baruch Atah Hashem, but there actually are other ways that we'll see. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, kol bracha she'in ba malchus, ain a bracha. If the bracha does not identify Hashem as melech, not a bracha. So usually, again, we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu, melech ha'olam. We identify Hashem as king, and that qualifies. However, that's not true for all brachos, right? Can you name a bracha for which we don't call Hashem Melech? What do you mean? Oh, right, Shema Koleinu. In Shmoneh Esrei, we do not call Hashem Melech. Not only Shema Koleinu, right? Which other brachos in Shmoneh Esrei do we not call Hashem Melech? You're right, but which other ones? It's actually
I think the end of every bracha toward us is just Baruch Hashem. It's not allocating Baruch
Hashem. Not only the end, the beginning as well. There are no brachos in Shmoneh Esrei other than Hamelach HaKadosh during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. none of them, except the opening bracha, you will say melech in it at the end. Melech ozer moshio magen. But that's it. So, I don't understand. Rabbi Yochanan says, you have to. How did you leave it out? So I point you to source number 2, in which the Gemara points out another bracha that doesn't have melech. Birkas ha'aretz, the second bracha in benching. Right? Nodeh. The bracha of Nodeh does not call Hashem melech. Nodeh lecha Hashem Elokeinu, you do say Hashem's name, but you don't say the word melech. So the Gemara asks, Birkas ha'aretz my time alone. Why doesn't the second bracha in benching have the word melech? And the answer it gives is odd, and we're going to have to come back to it. Mishum dehavila bracha hasmucha lachaverta. It is a bracha that is juxtaposed with another one. Meaning, the first bracha in benching has melech. That's how you start Birkat HaMazon, right? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam hazanes haolam kulo b'tuvo, etc. So you say melech in the first bracha, and then you don't need to for the next one. And similarly, the brachos in Shmona Esrei, 2 through 19, you don't need to say melech, because they're next to another bracha. So that's why it doesn't, require it. Because it's already got it, so to speak. I don't really understand what that means. Meaning, I can say the words. I understand what it's saying. It's saying that if the bracha is next to another bracha that said melech, then we're good. But I don't know why that should be true. Like, You don't say the same thing about Hashem's name, that, oh, I don't need Hashem's name in the bracha. I already said Hashem's name in the bracha before that. So we're going to have to come back to why that's true, but I'll mention 2 practical applications for it. Anybody have a sitter there? We should really have siddurim, right? I'm doing tefillah. I have a sitter. So if you look at the morning brachos, locate in your sitter, please, the bracha of Asher Yatzar. Very beginning. Right? Generally after Alatilas Yadayim. Okay, people have it? Up, oh, tech support once again for a sitter. So what comes right after Asher Yatzar in your sitter? I'm sorry?
The Torah
blessings. There's nothing between Asher Yatzar and Berachas HaTorah?
Well,
I believe you. Sedina says some have Elokai Neshama after Asher Yatzar. Right. So the truth is, you find both. You find Siddurim which, like Alina's, put Asher Yatzar and then Berachas HaTorah. And then they'll put Elokai Neshama usually after that, before Birkas HaShachar. And then you find other ones in which Asher Yatzar is immediately followed by Elokai Neshama. The reason to put Elokai Neshama right after Asher Yatzar is because look at the beginning of Elokai Neshama. What is it missing if it's a bracha? Well, Baruch it doesn't need, but it doesn't have Melech. Sorry? Yeah. Asher Yatzar does. Just checking. But Elokai Neshama doesn't have Malchus, and so the idea is that Elokai Neshama was designed to be said right after Asher Yatzar. Bracha Hasmuch Lachavrta, therefore it doesn't need Melech. Clear? So I can't justify the Siddurim that don't do that, but that's the way that that many people are careful to say Elokai Neshama is right after Asher Yatzar. Anybody know there's another example of this that happens for people, not so much during COVID, but other than that, it happens a lot. That was a weird hint, but it's true.
Can you repeat the question?
Yes. There's another case of a bracha, which is said right after another one to avoid a problem for the same bracha, smucha l'chaverta. It involves something that during COVID people don't really do, but otherwise they do. Otherwise, they do, you know, with some frequency, depending on who you are. Something that you do, that you stop doing because of COVID.
Only a minion.
No, not a minion. It would have been a good idea, but that's not what I was thinking of.
Mezuman.
Hmm. Also a good idea, but nope. Tefillas Haderech. Tefillas Haderech. So Tefillas Haderech also doesn't start with Hashem with Hashem as Melech. Right? Starts Yehi Ratzon. It has Hashem, but it doesn't have Melech.
That's why you're supposed to, some people make it Al-Mechya.
Exactly. So that's exactly it. It doesn't start with Hashem as Melech, and so what people will do, it's not strictly speaking a requirement, but what people will do is they'll have some food first, they'll make the bracha achrona on the food, and then they'll say their Tefillas Haderech. So it connects to the bracha on the food that preceded it. What happens if you realize you're on a trip and you don't have something to eat? So you say Tefillas Haderech anyway. But,
never heard of that in my lifetime.
You never heard that? Okay, now you know. Okay. Some people listened in class and some people didn't. Right. So this is going to come back to the question of what this is all about in the first place and why bracha smucha l'chaverta works at all. So we are getting there, God willing, hopefully today even, no promises. But that's one of the things I want to get to. So that was really just a wrap-up note about how careful Chazal were with the structure of brachos. They had very specific intentions. Again, I'm going to come back to more about this specific issue of the juxtaposed brachot. But first, what I want to do is do that language of the opening bracha in Shmona Esrei, because there's so much going on, and people don't know it. So first of all, we start Shmona Esrei. I'm not talking now about Hashem Svasai Tiftach. That's its own discussion, which we may come back to at some point. I'm going into the bracha itself. So we start Baruch Ata Hashem, as we do with so many other brachos. Why? Why do you start with Baruch Ata Hashem? Of course, if you looked ahead at the sources, you'll know all these things, but that's cheating. Not a bad cheating. It's a good cheating, but it's still cheating. So the Rokeach writes that it's because of Eliezer. Eliezer Eved Avram. When the Eved Avram, Avram's servant, goes to get a wife for Yitzchak, the Torah actually doesn't say his name, right? It doesn't say Eliezer, it just says Eved Avram, but he's the Eved Avram we know. So we generally assume it's Eliezer. So the Pasuk says, I brought you again the English in source number 3, that it says that he bowed, right? Vayikod, vayishtachavel Hashem. And he says, Hashem, God of my master Abraham, is blessed. That's my translation. But if you were to be looking at it in the original Hebrew, if you have a Chumash Bereshis, you would read, Baruch Ata Hashem, Baruch Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham. Baruch Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham. Blessed is Hashem, the God of my master Avraham. So the Rokeach says, that's why we say Baruch Hashem as the start of our brachos. We're modeling it on what he did. Which is very interesting, given that we don't know him to be a particularly righteous person. We make assumptions, and we have all sorts of midrashim. But it's not like the Torah actually says. Nonetheless, this is considered to be a model given to us in the Torah. We're going to come back to that because we're going to see somebody else held up as a model who also might be a little surprising. Yes, Shifra, you going to say? Nope. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. So that's that's Baruch Hashem. Of course, he skips a word, right? He doesn't say what word? What word does he not say? No, but I mean, that's true. But what else? He says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Adonai Abraham. Sorry? Well, he doesn't say Malchus. And the Rokeach actually discusses that and says the reason why he doesn't say Malchus is because this is before Hashem makes that aspect of himself revealed in the world. This is before Ushmi Hashem Lo Nodati Lahem and all, and there's more to be said about that. But I'm thinking about the fact that he doesn't use the word Atah. Baruch Hashem, Elokei Adonai Abraham. Our brachos say Baruch Atah Hashem. So how did we lose the Atah? So if you take a look at source number 10, I believe that that this is the basis for why we say Atah. It's pretty straightforward. Yerushalmi says, Rav Amar Tzarech Lomar Atah. Rav says, when you say a bracha, you have to say Atah, you. Ushmuel Amar Eino Tzarech Lomar Atah. And Shmuel says, no you don't. You don't need to say Atah. There's a commentary on that Yerushalmi called the Alei Tamar. So, Hadassah, you have to tell Tamar, she missed the Alei Tamar. But the Alei Tamar explains Shmuel's view. Shmuel says you don't need to say Atah because of Yisro. Yisro also says Baruch Hashem when he hears the news about all the things Hashem has done for us. And Yisro doesn't say Atah. So therefore, Shmuel says you don't need to say Atah. So why does Rav say that you have to say Atah? Eliezer didn't do it. Yisro didn't do it. Why does Shmuel think that it's valuable to say Atah in a bracha? Think about it. It's not from a text, it's just an idea. Yeah. It's more direct. It's more personal. Right? When Eliezer says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Adonai Abraham, he's talking about God. Blessed is God, master of, God of my master Abraham. But blessed, you are blessed, God.
But it's a little rude to say Atah, no? It's a little,
right.
Like, you know how, like, in French there's, like, different ways to say you. Like,
yes.
Right.
There's the two and there's the vu, and like why here? You know, we're even so careful that when we talk to somebody of great status, we talk in the third person. Right? You know, would the Rav like to whatever? You know, you don't speak directly. So the Aruch HaShulchan addresses this in source number 11, Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein. He says, Uvachol habrachos v'hatfilos anu medaber me'lav yisbarach b'lashon nochach. He says, in all brachos and in all davening, we daven to God in a direct way. Nochach, like you're standing in front of him, Baruch Atah. Uvmizmorim v'hoda'ot. On the other hand, in mizmorim and hoda'ot, when you're thanking Hashem, when you're singing of Hashem, yesh kama shomrim atahu. Some of those times it says, Atah, you, who, or him. Atahu, who did this? Nochach, direct, v'nistar, and hidden, indirect. V'ha'inyon muvan, ki atzmuso yisbarach ne'elam mikol ne'elam. He says, the logic here is pretty clear. He says, Hashem's essence is hidden beyond anything that is hidden. You can't say you can't see God. Even the malachim don't know where God is. They don't know God's true nature. Only through Hashem's deeds is Hashem known to them and to us. And he has a little part that I skipped about Baruch Kavod Hashem Mimakomo. You can know God's deeds. You can't know Hashem. V'zeu she'omrim atahu. That's the idea of atahu. Kolomar. Atah, you. Mitzad pe'ulosecha, in terms of your deeds, hu me'atzmuso, that's who you are in your essence. Or that's who he is in his essence, because I can't say you when I'm talking about God. When I talk to God saying you, I really mean God's actions, not God's nature. V'lachein, and therefore, b'tfilos sh'anu mevakshim mimeno yisbarach, when we daven and we ask Hashem for things, Sheyase kach v'kach, halom b'daber mitzad pe'ulo sav, you're speaking of Hashem's actions. V'lachein omrim ata, and therefore you say, you. So whenever you're saying you, it is on the one hand an attempt at a level of intimacy, proximity to God. On the other hand, there's a level of remoteness you have to keep in mind because you don't really know Hashem. Now, I should note, we skipped a major thing here. We did not really define the word Baruch. But I'm not going to do that today. Maybe we'll come back to that at some point. But that's really like its own hour to figure out what Baruch is. But that's the opening of our Shmona Esrei. Baruch Hashem, like Eliezer, like Yisro, and we throw in Atah in order to have some closeness to God as we describe God's actions. And then we get to the most fun part of this bracha. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. And here you always get the question, why is it that we don't include Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah? Why are we only talking about Abram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? And I've heard people give all sorts of very nice answers, you know, about how Hashem spoke to Abraham and about their model and all sorts of nice answers. But a pshat is look in a chumash. Specifically, what I brought you in source number 4, Hashem speaks to Moshe at the Sneh. And Hashem says to Moshe, Ani Hashem, Elokei Avraham Avicha, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. Hashem, Hashem introduces himself as Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. And then some psukim later, Moshe says to Hashem, the Jews are going to ask me, what is Hashem's name? What should I tell them? Ma shmo, ma omar alehem. And Hashem says back to him, what I brought you there in source number 4, this is what you shall tell B'nai Yisrael. Hashem, Elokei Avosechem, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov, Shlachani alehem. Tell them, the God of your ancestors, the God of Avram, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov, sent me to you. And then he says, Ze shemi le'olam v'ze zichri le'dor dor. That is the way you shall name me for all generations. That's why Shmona Esrei begins that way, because God said so. So much so that after the Egel, after the golden calf, Moshe appeals to Hashem to save the Jews. What does he say? Zechor l'Avraham li'Yitzchak, right? He says, remember Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, because that's who Hashem told him to mention when he davens. You follow? So I recognize that, you know, there are people who feel left out, so to speak. There are women who feel left out because Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah are not there. I'm a man, so therefore I'm not having the same feeling about it, obviously, that they are. But to my mind, I would first of all point out, but this is what God said to use. And the other point is, Abram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are everybody's property. They're not the property of people with XY chromosomes. I don't know how the people who protest and are upset about it feel about it, but I don't understand. I feel like Sarah and Hannah and all of the female role models in Tanakh are my ancestors also, and are also models for me. The fact that they are female doesn't, give me, a difficulty relating to them. You tell me. You're all female. Right. No, that's for sure true. Meaning, if there are issues that go way beyond this. And for that matter, you could push this question further. it's all well and good for us to answer that the reason why it's this way in Shemoneh Esrei is because God said that's the way he wants to be named. But why does God want to be named that way? Right? In other words, why isn't Hashem saying, go tell the Jews, I am Elokei Sarah, or Elokei Sarah of Avram, or Avram Besara? Like, you just push the question back one step. So you're right. It is a bigger picture issue. Right. You could go there. Right. I mean, you had to pick a pronoun. And Judaism doesn't have, Hebrew doesn't have the neutral pronoun. And Hashem's pronoun, when he is identified as Elohim, tends to be male.
Well, that's another question also. Like, why in Lashon HaKodesh is there not a neutral pronoun, right? Like, some languages do have that. And why is he,
right.
Why is he male or female? He should be either.
Right.
I'm saying that. The neutral pronoun, during me, but I see this as a much bigger picture of women in Tanakh.
Right. I mean, Hebrew is not the only language to not have a neutral pronoun. You know, it's not like Hebrew is the only one in this regard. And I think there's a certain human logic to having languages that do by default assign that. You know, we have enough things that are confusing. We can't even manage to keep measuring spoons power of. Sorry?
Often the neutral pronoun is the pronoun.
Well, that's
because it's just the whole world was kind of set up and managed by patriarchs and males, so it just became natural that way from the onset. So it's okay that it's male pronoun also for neutral. Like when you say Yeladim and you're combining the whole class of boys and girls, it's Yeladim. That's a normal kind of acceptable language, thing, but to not include the matriarchs it doesn't make sense that every time a male is chosen to be, let's say, to mention it at the beginning of Shema, it doesn't make sense to always say, and where are the ladies? Mm-hmm. It's okay that these are the forefathers. The forefathers are being mentioned here. I'm pretty pro-feminism or female advocacy, but it really doesn't make a difference that they're not named. It just
so
something you pick on if you want to look for where are women not mentioned.
Yeah.
But you could do the same thing to all the women mentioned and say, where are men not mentioned?
Right. Now, and you could do that. I mean, I'm going to go back to the beginning of what you were saying. In terms of neutral, we're distinguishing between neutral and default. In other words, you're right, the male one is the default one, but neutral would be if you had a pronoun that didn't have a male or female identity to it, and yet described a being rather than an object. I mean, you don't even have that in Hebrew. You don't have it.
Right.
You know, so that even that is missing. There is more to be said, I think, about all of this. The idea of things being patriarchal is often by necessity rather than will. And there's a lot we could go into with that: inheritance of land, the term Beit Av for a family. There's a lot to be said with it. And maybe I opened up more of a can of worms than I intended to. But I just pointing out, in this specific bracha, that the language is just based on psukim, and the whole bracha is based on psukim. But you're right, this isn't about solving the overall male nature of tefillah, or male nature of language, or the fact that Hashem chose them and said, these are the ones who I want to have. There are things you could say to point on that last point, but I think I'd rather see the rest of the bracha and extract myself from what I've gotten myself into. So,
women had a completely different world in those days. It completely has changed for the role of what females were like and what they are today.
Yes and no. But I'm going to really beg out of the conversation. The answer is yes and no, because Tanakh is not Eastern Europe. And things that happened 300 years ago aren't necessarily the things that were going on 3,000 years ago. So there's more to be said about the world of women in Tanakh. But it'll be for another time, God willing. We've got Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. And then Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, VeHanora. So the word Hakel there is actually subject to some discussion, because Kael can be a name, so to speak, a name of God, but it could also mean the powerful one, or just to mean one who is powerful. But the phrase Hagadol, Hagibor, VeHanora is one that we get with Hakel, actually, from Moshe. Take a look at source number 5. Rak Babosecha, right? Only your ancestors did Hashem choose, and he chose their descendants. Vaybchar bezaram acharehem kachem dat dat dat. Ki Hashem Elokechem hu Elokei hu Elokim va'adonei hu Adonim. God is the mightiest of the mighty, master of the masters. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, VeHanora. Moshe describes Hashem in that way. So what? So take a look at source number 12, please. I think it's 12. Yes, it is 12. Classic Gemara in Brachos. Somebody went to become chazan in front of Rabbi Chanina. He descended before Rabbi Chanina. You know why the Gemara uses the term descended for the chazan? The chazan is ideally supposed to stand in an area that's lower than everybody else. The term in the Gemara is yored lifnei hateva, to go down in front of the aron. And the idea is, because we call out to Hashem, mima'amakim, from the depths. So the chazan is supposed to be lower. I know that there are shuls in which the chazan at times ends up standing on a higher area, nonetheless. So somebody went to be the chazan in front of Rabbi Chanina, one of the Tanoim, and said, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, VeHanora, and then he went on, and he added a whole bunch of praises of Hashem, more adjectives. So Rabbi Chanina waits for him to finish. I should have reinserted the Hebrew in this one. Oh well. But Rabbi Chanina waits for him to finish. And then he asks him, what, you're done now? You said all the tefillos? You said all the praises of Hashem? He says, you're not supposed to praise Hashem, because if you start trying to describe Hashem's greatness and you stop, then what you've actually done is you've undermined the praise of Hashem, because you've imposed a limit. What you ought to do, he says, is stick with these, because the only reason we can say them is because Moshe said them. The only reason I am entitled to praise Hashem at all is because Moshe did it. And if Moshe did it, I guess it's okay. But it's not something that you should be inventing, because, again, who gave you permission to stop? You follow? That's the idea. So we build Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, VeHanora on Moshe. And then we say that God is Kael Elyon. Kael Elyon is, I mentioned before, we're going to be talking about some interesting role models in Tanakh. Take a look at source number 6. Who is speaking in source number 6? Mia Marelmi. Yeah, Malki Tzedek, after Abraham wins the war against the four kings, right? It was last week's Parsha. Malki Tzedek comes out with bread and wine, and he says to him, Baruch Avram l'Kael Elyon, blessed be Avram to Kael Elyon, the highest God, Konei Shemayim Va'aretz, Borei Shemayim Va'aretz, creator of heaven and earth. And we talked about this once. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about how he blesses Avram before he blesses Hashem, and that's a mistake. Nonetheless, we use that term, Kael Elyon, because Malki Tzedek used it, and other line here, Nebuchadnezzar. After Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah survive in the fiery furnace, he says to them, come on out of the furnace. He uses the Babylonian names for them, the names he had given them, which were associated with his gods, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of Kael Elyon, come out of the furnace. So why is it that we adopt a name specifically used by Malki Tzedek Granted, Malki Tzedek is a good guy, right? Abraham gives Meiser to Malki Tzedek. But Nebuchadnezzar, destroyer of the Beis HaMikdash? Like, why does he get into the opening bracha of Shmona Esrei? Could be, you're right. You could make the statement that he's just, it's really Malki Tzedek, it's not about Nebuchadnezzar. I think you could say more though. I don't know if anyone's ever encountered this situation, but sometimes in your travels, you may come across some kind of little mini statue of some kind that looks like it was once used for Avodah Zarah, used for idolatry. But it looks interesting, and you like to buy it and take it home and put it on your mantle. You know anybody who's done that? I mean, people do. I've seen that in houses that I've gone into. Generally speaking, I would suggest that people not do that. Do not try this at home. However, if there is a statue which has been worshipped by somebody who is not Jewish, and then they do what's called bitul, they cancel it. They say, I'm not worshipping that anymore. That removes its status as an avodah zarah. That removes its status as an idol. A non-Jew is able to do bitul avodah zarah, is able to cancel an idol. A Jew is not able to do it. The fact that I see a statue somewhere and say, I am not worshiping it, or even say no one should worship it, does not cancel its status. Only a non-Jew is able to remove its status. So I think what's going on with Kel Elyon is that we're recognizing that Malki Tzedek, as well as Nebuchadnezzar, are engaged in Bitul Avodah Zarah. They're canceling Avodah Zarah by declaring Hashem the highest God. Granted that still acknowledges the existence of others, right? If it's the highest, that suggests there are others. That's a whole discussion about non-Jews and Shituf partnering God with other gods. But the point is that we're using Kel Elyon here to say the nations of the world recognized Hashem over their Avodah Zarah, calling Hashem Kel Elyon. I suppose you could translate it that way, but Elyon usually means highest.
Highest?
Yeah. We usually contrast Elyon and Tachton.
Right, but I thought it just means, like, in the heavens, like, that's where he is. He's not, like, a physical...
Right. So if I were a translator who was really bothered philosophically by calling God highest because it makes it sound like there are others, then I probably would do exactly what you just did and say it doesn't really mean highest, it means the one who is above. I'm sure Art Scroll will do that.
Yeah,
now that's likely, but I don't think it's necessarily the normal way to translate that word. Yeah. By the way, Elyon is also used by Avraham, right? So that is highest. Supreme is, there are others. Yeah. It's a good way to conceal it, but it's what they're doing.
Like ultimate, like the most.
Yeah. Avram uses it when he talks to the king of Sodom. He says, Harimosi Yadi El Hashem Kael Elyon. So Avram does it when he's talking to the king of Sodom. Okay. So that's Kael Elyon. And then you have Lema'an Shemo. Right? The Hagadol Hagibor Vanarak El Elyon. I see what I did. I skipped Gomel Chazem Tovim Mekonei Hakol V'Zocher Chazvei Avos M'Viko El Nevnei Hem. I think in the interest of time, I skipped the middle of it and jumped to the end when I first created this. But Leman Shemo is a really important line. Also, it's a problem line, right? Why is Leman Shemo a problem? What does it mean? If you look in your sitter. Yeah, doesn't it? It sounds like he did it for his reputation, because that's what it says. It says that he does all of these nice things. Gomel chasidim tovim, kone akol, creates everything. Zocher chasidei avos, umevi goel lifnei bneihem. He remembers the generosity of the avos. That's his whole other discussion. Brings a redeemer to their descendants. Laman shemo, for his name's sake. Well, thanks a lot. Not for me. That's one problem. What else is problematic in there? How about the next word? Be'ahava.
It seems to
contradict. Yeah. Either it's Laman Shemo, or it's Be'ahava, with love. How many times do we say Shemona Esrei and just say those words without, you know, pausing to think, oh wait, that just contradicted itself, didn't it? It's a very odd thing. So there's a lot to be said about this, just like with many of these ideas. But Laman Shemo is straight out of Tehillim, in source number 7, in which the Pasuk says that Hashem saved our ancestors from Egypt, Laman Shemo. It's actually, you know, explicit. Hashem did it for his name's sake. Be'ahava, in love for us. Effectively what we're doing, and there's more to be said, maybe I'll come back to this even next time, because the truth is there are sources I could have brought that would have added to this. But or maybe I'll just send it out in the follow-up email later. The idea of Laman Shemo, on the one hand, Hashem does it for his name's sake, and Be'ahava, he does it with love for us, is that there are really two goals in this universe. Hashem has two goals, not one goal. The goal of Laman Shemo, having us recognize Hashem's name, is basic to why he created us in the first place. Hashem creates us wanting us to grow, to take material existence and give it kedusha, give it holiness, which requires that we come to a recognition of Hashem as creator. For the world to reach the state Hashem wants it to reach, there has to be a recognition that there is a God. That's Laman Shemo. But the ultimate purpose of it is Be'ahava, it's out of love for us. We will not be able to achieve what we need to achieve until we recognize Hashem's name, and therefore out of love for us, Hashem has to bring us to this point. To give an entirely inappropriate analogy, a kid in school, right, who doesn't want to learn math, you tell the kid, look, you have to learn the math. You need to, at the end of the day, know the math. It's not because you want the kid to know math. It's because you love the kid, and for the kid's own sake, they need to get to that point. So you need to grasp the math. You, my child, need to grasp the math because of my feelings for you. That's why this matters. Hashem wants us to recognize Shemo, his name, because of the love that he has for us. That's what drives it. You follow? The two go together. There's more to be said, and I think I should really bring more on that next time. Melech Ozer, Umoshia Umagain. So I brought you the psukim that are the basis for that in sources 8 and 9. In 8, we say, the Jews are Am Noshab Hashem. This is from the end of the Chumash. Ashrecha Yisrael Mikamocha, Am Nosha Bashem, Magain Ezrecha. You are a nation who is Nosha, Moshia, redeemed, saved by God, who is Magain Ezrecha. He is the Magain who is your Ozer. He is the shield who helps you. So Ozer Umoshia Umagain is right out of that Pasuk. And then Hashem says to Abraham, last week's parsha, Anochi magen lach, I am a magen for you. Therefore, we describe Hashem as magen Abraham. You see that? Now, I didn't come back to the word melech. Melech ozer umoshia umagen. We added the word melech. So that's something we're going to come back to in a little bit. That's going to take us back into our bracha smucha lachaberta discussion. But what I wanted you to get out of this is, first of all, food for thought the next time you say Shmona Esrei. Because all this stuff is going on in the opening bracha, and we just speed through it. So now hopefully there's something to think about. But also in general, to give us an understanding that there's so much going on when you daven, and so much of Tanakh that's there in it. Even in like the middle brachos. You know, the bracha of Rifa'enu Hashem b'nei Rafei, Hoshienu b'nei Vashaya, is actually a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. It's the 17th chapter in Yirmiyahu. 17:14, Yud Zayin Yud Dalet. It's in source number 13. That I noted that for you. Almost the same. When I mentioned you having a Tanakh before, did anybody get one? Okay. Take a look, please, at that pasuk. It's worth looking up. Yirmiyahu Yud Zayin Yud Dalet. 17:14. You see it? So what's the difference between the pasuk in Yirmiyahu and the bracha in Shmona Esrei? Yeah. The way it's worded in Yirmiyahu, Rifa'eni Hashem ve'erafei, heal me Hashem and I will be healed. Hoshieni ve'ivashaya, save me and I will be saved. Kisi lasi ata, because you are my tehillah. Leave the word tehillah out for right now. It just becomes pluralized in Shmona Esrei. Why is it pluralized in Shmona Esrei? Sorry? Why is it pluralized in Shmona Esrei?
Together, like communal, like in the beginning, together.
Right. We're collective. We're making a point to God. I'm not bringing the pasuk as it is, because in the pasuk itself, it's in the singular. Hashem, I'm appealing to you on behalf of everybody. It's what we're making a point by turning it collective. The absence of wording, though, is also important. The absence of something is also critical. And this brings us back to Bracha Hasmucha Lachaberta. And the fact that you're missing, in the opening Bracha Shmona Esrei, Melech HaOlam, which we said is important. Why isn't Melech HaOlam there? Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu. We took out Melech HaOlam. Didn't you tell me that Malchus is really, really important in a bracha? So some argue that it's really there. Tosfos, on that Gemara in Brachos, says it's included in Elokei Avraham. Because Avraham declared Hashem to be Melech, to be king. So fine. The Rush, also in Brachos, says Hakel HaGadol counts. Rav Haigon says that's when we write Melech Ozer in the Bracha. That Melech is Hashem as Melech. You follow? But Rav Aaron Lichtenstein offers a different approach, which gives a lot more meaning to the whole idea of Bracha Hasmucha Lachaberta. The idea that a bracha is different if it's juxtaposed with a bracha before it, and I think this is an important point to think about. We asked a question in the beginning. We saw that source number one, Rav said you have to have Hashem's name in it to be a bracha, and Rabbi Yochanan says it has to have melech in it. The need for the name of Hashem in the bracha is not the same as the need for Hashem being melech. After all, the Gemara said that if you have a bracha hasmucha l'chaverta, a bracha that's beside another bracha, you don't need to say melech. But you do need to say Hashem's name. Right? Everyone with me? You don't need to say melech if your bracha is beside another bracha that said melech. When you bench, right, no delecha doesn't have melech because the opening one did. But it does need to say Hashem's name. So clearly the two things are different. Not only that, take a look at source number 14. I don't want to rush this, but I want to make sure that we get it in. So source number 14, the Yerushalmi. Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Yehuda quoted Rav, saying, a bracha she'eni mamalchus, if it doesn't have Hashem as monarch, it's not a bracha. And then it gives an explanation for why. The pasuk that we have in the beginning of Ashrei, Aromimcha Elokai Hamelech. Because in the pasuk we say, I will exalt you, Hashem, you are the melech. That's how I know you're supposed to say melech in a bracha. Because of the pasuk in Tehillim, Aromimcha Elokai Hamelech, that shows you're supposed to call Hashem melech. You don't have anywhere in the Gemara where it says, and the reason why you have to include the name of Hashem in a bracha is because of such and such. It's just a given.
Well, it is the bracha.
Ah. Sadasi says exactly what Rav Aaron said. Take a look at source number 15. He says, Nira Pashut. It appears obvious. I'll just do my English translation in the interest of time. It appears obvious that the requirement of the name in a bracha is not a halachic requirement of a bracha. The name is that which defines it as a bracha. By having Hashem's name. If you didn't have Hashem's name in the bracha, if you were not talking to or about Hashem, it wouldn't be a bracha. Without it, we're not reciting a bracha at all. On the other hand, he says, mentioning monarchy, malchus, is an added requirement above and beyond the actual structure and definition of the bracha. It is a requirement which we wouldn't make if not because of the pasuk that was quoted. Aramimcha Elokai HaMelech. That's what teaches me you have to say melech. That's why Rabbi Tanchuma identified a special source for it. And it appears you can take this from Rav's language in the Yerushalmi. Rav's language was called bracha she'ein ima malchus. A bracha that doesn't have monarchy with it. Meaning there's the bracha and there's monarchy with the bracha. But it's not essential to a bracha. And what he suggests is that that's why it can be replaced. Meaning, every bracha has to say in it, I am talking to God. And Shem Hashem is required. Whether that's bracha to Hashem, or no delecha Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem's name has got to be there. However, when you talk about including melech, what you're really trying to do, Rav Aaron says, and I didn't bring his whole piece here, obviously, but the link is there. What you're doing here when you say a bracha and you include melech is you're trying to show an appreciation for Hashem as king. The idea is, I am trying to show that I recognize Hashem's control over all. That's what I accomplish by saying melech. When you call someone king, you show you recognize that. In the event that my bracha is preceded by another one that started with melech, I don't need to say it in this one, because I already showed that. So when I bench, the first bracha in benching says, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam. So when I get to Noda, I don't need to say melech, because I already did it. I already showed that I understand that. That's why you don't need to. And so Rav Aaron says, maybe the reason why you don't say melech in the opening bracha of Shmona Esrei is because you're already standing before the king. That's by definition what you do in Shmona Esrei. If you didn't recognize Hashem as melech, you wouldn't be there. That's what Shmona Esrei is all about, is being in front of the melech. So to sum up what we're saying here, the number one, Hashem's name is what makes it a bracha. And number two, our humble attitude of facing a melech is crucial. The humility that you express when you say, I recognize Hashem as melech, is in and of itself very significant, and and necessary to establish in the bracha, either by saying it, or because you said it in the previous bracha, or because of the way you orient yourself in Shmona Esrei. That's what they're trying to show you here in the bracha, which is why we don't veer from it. We make sure to follow this this text and this structure. Is that clear? Meaning?
As a general rule, when we daven, we say a lot of things in a lot of different ways. Like, we're not like, oh, I already said he's a melech, so now I'm not going to say it again.
Right. So I would note, yeah, I think you're right, but I think you're right only about a specific area of tefillah. There are three parts to davening. There are brachos, there are psukim, and there are piyutim. Right? What we've been describing for the past hour is a bracha. The brachos are minimalist. The text of a bracha is built around psukim, midrashim, philosophical ideas, and you will not see a prolix bracha. Brachos don't go on like that. Tehillim, which makes up so much of our davening, right? Psukim d'zimra, all the Pirkei Tanakh, will often include, as you say, words that seem to be saying exactly what we said before. And then there are piyutim, which definitely have redundancy in them. I mean, I did an experiment for myself, and this goes back to our discussion about Tachanun last week. This may not resonate with any of you, but V'hu Rachum is said as part of Tachanun on Monday and Thursday mornings. It is extremely long. Like, even a chazan saying it fast, if they're saying all the words, is taking 4 minutes. It's just, that's the nature of it. V'hu Rachum is a long text, and a lot of it really does seem to be redundant. It pulls psukim in different ways multiple times. So I did a little experiment for myself to try to see if I could figure out sort of the structure. Does each paragraph have a theme? It is so hard to do. There's so much there that's redundant. It's really a piyut, but it's not a bracha. Brachos are precise. Psukim and piyutim are not. That's the distinction I would draw. Okay? So what I want to do next time is, first of all, I want to finish up some points about this opening bracha. Specifically, I might come back to Leman Shmo B'Ahava, but also talk about numerology, because that's cool. Some of the gematria that's in this opening bracha, as well as posture for Shmona Esrei, and how even the posture that we use is based in Tanakh. And then once we get beyond that, I'm going to ask you, do you want to talk about specific tefillos and analyze them? Do you want to talk about tefillah in general? Like, I'm open to different ideas about how to proceed. I'll probably include that as a question in the follow. Maybe I'll send a follow up email and ask that. Okay. Thank you very much.